Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, CFRO. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang.
Hey, hey.
Our technician, John Pranger, who is running the controls, and our regular co-host, Krista, is not able to be here today, so we are delighted to have a special fill-in for this week, Marianne Varigan. Welcome, Marianne, and thank you for coming on the show this week.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. This is great.
Up on the show today, after the upcoming events and new segments, we'll be doing an interview with Gary Lowenthal, who is the vice president and co-founder of the organization Compassion for Animals and the director of an event that is making its mark all around the world, the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. Gary will be speaking to us about this event and what you can do to get involved. And for our feature interview, we will have James Levesque on the show, the producer of the award-winning film Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. For those who don't know, Peaceable Kingdom is a film depicting the emotional lives of farm animals and the personal relationships between the animals and those connected with the farm industry. We are pleased to have James here today to speak about the film and in promotion of its Canadian premiere that will take place here in Vancouver next week. That's right. Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home will make its Canadian film screening debut on Sunday, March 21st as part of the Canada International Film Festival, which takes place in Vancouver starting on March 19th. And we have two VIP passes to the entire film festival to offer to a lucky caller. So these passes will give you and a guest entry to the film festival parties, as well as to all of the films being shown at the festival, which goes from the 19th to the 21st. In order to win these passes, all you have to do is be the first caller to call our studio right now. So please call us at 604-684-7561 for your chance to win two VIP passes to the Canada Film Festival next week. And of course, the much anticipated film Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. Once again, the number to call is 604-684-7561. And while we are waiting for our lucky caller, Marianne, you have something to share with us today. You run a charity called SAFE, which stands for Society for Animal Freedom and Equality, and you would like to talk to us today about that.
Yes, thank you very much again for inviting me to come. This is a great opportunity, and I'm excited to be here. And yeah, just to let you know a little bit about the organization that I run, it's called Society Animal Freedom and Equality, as Allison mentioned, and our mission is to shift people's perceptions towards animals, to elevate them from being looked at as commodities and there for our use, that to see them as wanting to live their own free lives and in an equal state to our own. And the way that we approach things is through education and challenge, asking people to really challenge the way that they look at animals. And excuse me, I'm a little bit nervous. I haven't been
Sounds
on the radio
interesting.
In a while. And we find that people really are inconsistent with the way that they view animals. And so we really ask people to challenge how they view animals, why they look at them different, like through different species, and really challenge those. And once they start to do that, they start shifting, and the natural expression then of their new shift is veganism. And so we really promote veganism as being the natural way to express the new belief system.
That sounds great, Marianne. Any plans for the future that we should know about with SAFE?
Well, we do have some programs that we're developing, some workshops, and so stay tuned. We're not quite ready to announce what they are or when, but hopefully for the fall or January, we'll have a whole series of workshops that we want to promote throughout the Lower Mainland.
Perhaps we can talk to you more about that later when that comes up.
Yes, I'll let interview. You know. I'll let you know when they're ready to go.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you, Marianne.
Thanks.
I think we have our lucky caller on the phone. So we have Carl here from North Vancouver. Hello, Carl, and congratulations.
Hey, Carl.
You're the winner to the two VIP passes
to
the Canada Film Festival. How does it feel like to be a winner?
Well, you know, all the people who go vegan, they're all winners, you know.
Good point.
And just everybody who listens to your show is also a winner. It's just such a magnificent show. You have such variety. Today you have Marianne Varigan on there. She's a long-time acquaintance. And of course, James Levesque, whom I met at the Animal Rights Convention in Los Angeles, and so we're seeing all those people, and we'll probably be seeing you there too, Allison.
Yes, I'll definitely be there, Carl.
So it's a great show. They've changed it from the previous Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. They've been working on it for about 7 years, I think, and I'm sure it's going to be a winner.
Well, thank you, Carl, and we'll let you know later how you can claim your prize. So congratulations.
Okay, and thank you very much for putting on such a wonderful show.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Carl.
Bye.
So, Joanne and Marianne, did you happen to see Jonathan Safran Foer's appearance on The Ellen Show this week? Jonathan Safran Foer is, of course, the author of probably the most influential book of the decade for the animals called Eating Animals. And this book has been on the New York Times bestseller list this past year, as well as getting tons of attention in the mainstream media.
I think I have a crush on him.
He is rather cute, isn't he?
He is, and he says such wonderful things, and his book is just truly amazing.
Very well spoken, too.
Mm-hmm.
I did see the show. It was really good.
Yeah, I mean, he was on the showing last November, and that was just wonderful, too. Ellen's been doing a really great job of having these pro-animal activists and advocates on the show. One thing that a question that she asked this week that I found was interesting was she said, so why haven't the factory farming people said anything, you know, since this book has come out? You'd think that they would want to defend their industry, right? And he said, what he said was not, or and what she said, I believe, was not one factory farm has spoken up. He says the book was met with silence, which means one of two things: either every fact that I've written, which are all footnoted, is correct, or they don't want this conversation to expand.
Right.
Yes.
So I found that to be really interesting. Like, he really says these profound things that when you see him speak or in an interview, an article that's been written about him, you go, wow, that's so true. And yet I've never thought of that before. I've never heard it being said before.
Exactly.
It's quite amazing.
And I mean, the book, if you haven't read it, please go get a copy. It's everywhere, Eating Animals. And there are some facts. I thought I knew everything about meat production, but there were things that shocked me. And I think, you know, everybody will find that book very, very informative.
Right. Actually, speaking of reading the book, I just ordered mine from Amazon last week, and the Ursay Readers Group is reading it now.
That's great.
For March. So get a hold of the book. We'll probably be reading it for 2 months, so you have a long, long time to get a hold of it and read it. And as I've heard many people say before, it's quite a page-turner. Another thing that I really... did you remember the part when he was making a comparison of being an environmentalist to eating less meat? Do you remember what he was saying there?
Go ahead.
He's gotten so much better at his interviews. I just want to say, compared to like when he first went on to Ellen like a few months ago, and it's true. Like, most people say things like, you know, I was a vegetarian until I got a craving, and then that was it. And what he was saying is that, you know, I'm an environmentalist. I took the airplane to come here, and taking the airplane is like the most damaging thing to the environment. So now I've taken the plane. That doesn't mean now I have a free pass to,
now, you know, I should stop recycling. Now I should stop turning off the light.
Idling.
Yeah, and he says we should think about food the same way. You know, it's not an all or nothing thing. Do what you can. And he was saying how I might misquote this wrong, but he was saying if every person in America ate one less meal of meat per week, that would save, it was a number that started with five with a lot of zeros.
It's like 55 million. It's equivalent of taking 55 million cars off the road.
For a year, wasn't it?
I don't know. Maybe.
No, I think, if everyone in America just ate one less meal a week for as long as they did that for. So, you know, it's something definitely that people should think about. And one more thing is, I was so touched by what Ellen said at the end of the show about veganism. It made me cry, and I might cry reading it now. Her vegan outreach on her show in these last 2 years has been outstanding. And this is what she said. She said, I used to eat cheeseburgers every day. I used to eat steak. I used to eat all that stuff and I loved it, and yet I called myself an animal lover. And I opened my eyes one day and I read a book and I went, wow, I don't know what I was thinking. I just separated everything, but this is the best thing I ever did. And for 2 years now, I have not been sick. I sleep better. I feel better. And so it's why I share this information, because I know that you can be healthier and we can be kinder to these poor animals that are tortured every single day.
Oh, that's so great.
Fabulous. And that's exactly what I've been talking about with it, you know, challenging people's perceptions. Mm-hmm.
It's
and
a common theme on our show, too. Mm-hmm. And finally, who saw the Academy Awards show last weekend? There was a victory for the animals at the Oscars last week as the much-lauded film The Cove won the award for Best Documentary Film.
I thought that was quite remarkable because, you know, when you look at the nominations for that category, there were 5 nominations, and two of them were human rights / political, and one is about American politics, and another one is about locavore, happy meat movement. And The Cove is through and through an animal rights film, and that won. And when you look back to like 5-10 years ago, that would not even be nominated. An animal rights film? Are you kidding me? And it won. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, you know, that's an indication that, that the animal rights movement have arrived.
Not only that, Food Incorporated was also nominated, and there's a lot of animal rights issue in that as well.
Well, that's the locavore, happy meat.
They show how the meat is produced, right? So definitely just bringing it out there into the mainstream.
And were you watching what happened when they got the award?
I didn't actually get to watch it, but I sure read about it.
Yeah, so they won, and they call them onto the stage, and producer Stephen Fisher spoke for like 20 seconds, and then he pointed to Rick O'Berry, who is the activist in the film, and Rick O'Berry held up a sign, and then immediately the camera panned off of him, and the music started playing, and, you know, the director, Louis Zahoyos, didn't even get to the microphone.
The two of them had said, like, they were so... They were so ready and prepared for making it a 45-second speech because they were told it's very strict and everything. They even had it timed down to 44 seconds between the two of them.
Right.
And when Rick O'Berry held up that sign that said text dolphin to 44144. So there we are. We're telling you if you want to do that.
I was just going to ask, what did the sign
even
say?
Even so, it got enough airtime that 2 days afterwards, I read that they've already received 50,000 text messages.
That's great. I text.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So, and I wonder a week later how much they've received. So, very interesting, you know.
You know, a fact I found out is that in Japan, the Oscars is the most watched show.
Yeah.
So they probably didn't want
to
offend them. And what happens when you text dolphin to 44144 is that it will sign you up to their action alert to fight against the dolphin slaughter. So if ever there's an action that needs to be taken, you will receive a text message telling you what action to take.
One action, of course, that they're taking is they'll be returning to TG Japan in September this year when slaughter starts, and they're recruiting people to go. If you can possibly go, they want to know if you can be there with them to show your support. At the Oscars, they already drummed up a bit of celebrity support. They've recruited celebrities Daryl Hannah, Sting, and Ben Stiller, who said that they're going to be there.
That's great.
Yeah. And one other thing that I wanted to mention is that there's going to be a new television series about this the dolphin trade in Vancouver, or sorry, in Japan, tentatively titled Dolphin Warriors. It's going to be played on the Animal Planet. Yeah, the series picks up where the movie leaves off, and like the film, stars animal activist Rick O'Berry. 2 episodes of the series have already been completed, and premiere date has yet to be announced, but it'll be start aired sometime after this summer after they air The Cove on their station.
Yay, great victory for the dolphins.
Mm-hmm. At this time, I would like to remind our listeners out there to please join our Facebook group. It's called Animal Voices Vancouver. Please show your online support by joining there, and you'll get to receive advance notice of what's coming up on our show. Plus, we post all of our shows there as MP3s to listen to directly from the page, and there are also some interesting discussions to join in contests as well to enter, like the one we had today, which was actually our first call-in contest.
Mm-hmm.
We also welcome your comments and suggestions about the show on our Facebook page, and you are also welcome and encouraged to send your comments and suggestions to our email address if you prefer, which is radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And last but not least, we're on Twitter as well if you want to follow us there. Our Twitter name is Animal Voices YVR, all one word. You are listening to 102.7 Co-op Radio on CFRO, a community radio station in Vancouver, BC, Canada. And now we have Joanne on the news.
Hooray! Now time for the Animal Voices news. This first one comes from the New York Times. With video cameras and tiny microphones, the team behind Sunday's Oscar-winning documentary The Cove orchestrated a Hollywood meets Greenpeace-style covert operation to ferret out what the authority says is an illegal whale meat at, one of Santa Monica's most highly regarded sushi destinations, The Hump. Charles Humbleton, associate producer for The Cove, upon hearing rumors that the restaurant served whale, created a tiny camera for two animal activists to wear during a monster session of omakase, a sushi meal in which the chef picks all the dishes. And the animal activists, by the way, were vegans. Samples from the meal were sent to the Marine Mammal Institute of Oregon State University, where DNA testing revealed that the samples were from a sei whale, which are found worldwide and are endangered, but are sometimes hunted in the North Pacific under the controversial Japanese scientific program. Armed with a search warrant, federal officials on Friday went searching for evidence from the restaurant. The possession or sale of marine mammals is a violation of the Marine Mammal Protection Act in the U.S. and can lead to a year in prison and a fine of $20,000. So whale meat in L.A., isn't that crazy? The next one comes from the London Telegraph. Vegans and atheists should have the same protection against discrimination as religious groups, according to guidance on new equality law proposed by Harriet Harman. Ms. Harman's proposed equality bill would not change the law in religious beliefs, but the commission is drafting a code at the same time in order to help employers interpret existing legislation. The draft code currently under consultation singles out vegans who do not eat animal products or wear leather as meriting protection from religious discrimination. It says a person who is vegan chooses not to use or consume animal products of any kind. That person eschews the exploitation of animals for food, clothing, accessories, or any other purpose, and does so out of an ethical commitment to animal welfare. The code says the current definition of belief also included a lack of belief, giving protection to atheists. It adds it's for tribunals to determine what constitutes a religion. Cults and new religious movements may also be religions. A spokesman for Ms. Harman's department, the Government Equality Office, said the government did not share the view that climate change or veganism were religious beliefs. However, their interpretation was a matter for courts. This next one is from Haaretz.com. The Ministerial Committee on Law and Constitution in Israel voted Sunday to ban the import and export of furs of all kind, saving those designated for religious or traditional use. Agriculture Minister Shalon Sahan initiated the bill to expand upon an existing law that prohibits local production and manufacturing, importing, exporting, and selling of furs from cats and dogs. Sahan proposed expanding the ban to include furs from all animals. He said wild animals suffer as a result of the fur industry, which is a cruel industry. Which is a cruel industry made for the production of luxurious artifacts. The animal's skin is stripped from them while they're still alive. There's no reason why Israel should continue to strengthen this industry. We should set an example to the rest of the world on this matter.
What's the weather like in Israel? Does it get really cold there?
I don't know, but I know.
But still, it's a good, you know, it's a good stand for the animals, even if it's just in principle, yeah. Not so much in practice.
Well, I know it's written in their constitution, animal rights, animal welfare laws. So they were the third largest producers of foie gras, and they banned it completely. So they really have a real commitment to animal welfare.
Right, that's wonderful.
Hmm. Remember American Idol winner Ruben Studdard? Mm-hmm. Well, he recently lost 100 pounds by going vegan.
Wow.
Yeah. Ruben explained his weight loss on the Wendy Williams show this week, saying, I went to vegetarianism about a year and a half ago, and and then about 6 months ago, I started becoming completely vegan. He went on to explain how he loves eating and cooking vegan soul food and vegan mac and cheese. Apparently, there's quite the vegan soul food movement happening in the southern United States. Who would have thunk?
Mm-hmm.
This next one is from the Vancouver Sun. The Canadian Restaurant and Food Service Association surveyed 400 chefs last January and February and asked them to identify upcoming food trends. The results of the survey were released at the annual CRFA show that took place over the weekend in Toronto. Are you ready for the top 10 list? We'll do it David Letterman style. We'll start from the 10th one. Number 10 is non-traditional fish, 9 quinoa, 8 Middle Eastern cuisine, 7 gluten-free cuisine, 6 new fabricated cuts of meat, 5 African cuisine, 4 organic alcohol, and number 3 vegan entrees.
Thank you very much, Joanne.
2 gluten-free beer and 1 ancient grains. That's it.
Thanks, wow. Joanne, for the news. John, you have something that you'd like to share with us? Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just lost it. hang on, there we are. No. Oh, dear, I lost my page.
Do you want us to get back to you later if we have time?
Yeah, if you would, please.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to read some events. These are, or actually, what do we have next? Yeah, we do have the events. Today, Friday, March the 5th, and every Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., there is an anti-fur leafleting event at Snowflake Furs at the Hotel Vancouver at 900 West Georgia Street in downtown Vancouver. Join Vancouver activists at the Fairmont Hotel, Vancouver, this Friday and every Friday as they peacefully protest outside the Snowflake Fur store, handing out leaflets to passersby about the fur industry. For more information, you can contact Laurie Fitzgerald at lpacificrim at yahoo.ca. Today, Friday, March the 21st, from 6:30 p.m. to 10 p.m., there's going to be a vegan bake sale fundraiser for Chile at the Rada Yoga and Eatery restaurant at 628 Main Street in Vancouver. They had a very successful fundraiser bake sale for Haiti in January, and I read they raised over $3,000. Once again, Vancouverites are teaming up with Rada Yoga and Eatery for a night of vegan baked goods and musical entertainment by singer Reed Jameson, with all the proceeds going to Chilean relief efforts. It's all held during Rada's dinner service from 6:30 to 10 p.m. Come for dinner or just for the event and bring home tons of yummy baked goods. Please bring your own reusable containers to tote your goodies home and bring your friends along as well. Monday, March the 15th is the International Day of Action for Seals. This takes place wherever you are. Join compassionate people like you for this online day of action against the bloody seal slaughter. Did you know that during Canada's annual war on seals, sealers routinely hook live seals in the eye, cheek, or mouth to avoid damaging the fur. Then they drag the seals along the ice, across the ice. Many of these gentle creatures not only even have eaten their first solid meal or taking their first swim before they are slaughtered for their skin. There are ways to help. You can update your Facebook status with a pro-seal message and become a fan of PETA on Facebook and share their posts. You can tweet for the seals, or you can even tweet at Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, which is at PM Harper, asking him to stop the seal slaughter. For more information on the annual seal slaughter, visit www.canadashame.com. Thursday, March the 18th at 7:30 p.m., there's going to be a veggie drinks night hosted by EarthSave Canada at Shivana Lounge at 2340 West 4th Avenue in Vancouver. This is your chance to run with your own kind or in the circles you'd like to run in, that is vegetarians, vegans, flexitarians, and pescatarians. EarthSave is headed back to Shivana. Their new chef is going to be making a veggie fresh sheet with specials for these monthly drinks nights. There are also regular or vegan appetizers and entrees on the menu, reasonably priced drinks, and comfortable seats. The live music is very good and not so loud so that you can't talk. So come and join in on this event. It's a great way to meet like-minded people. Non-alcoholic drinks are, of course, available for those who don't care for alcohol, and the alcoholic drinks are on special on Thursdays. Everyone is welcome, and entrance is by donation. To find out more and to RSVP, go to meetup.com and search Vancouver Meatless Meetup. And finally, on Sunday, March the 21st at 4:40 p.m., there is the Canadian premiere of the award-winning film Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. Here are the details. It will be at the Edgewater Casino, which is located at 311-750 Pacific Boulevard South in Vancouver. A story of transformation and healing, this 78-minute documentary features seven remarkable individuals engaged in a courageous struggle of conscience, each trying to reintegrate the parts of themselves that were fragmented by expectations and experiences that went against their deepest natures. The film provides insight into their sometimes amazing connections with the animals under their care, while also making clear and complex web of making clear the complex web of social, psychological, and economic forces that have led them to their conflict. Described by many viewers as a life-changing experience, Peaceful Kingdom, The Journey Home shatters stereotypical notions of farmers, farm life, and perhaps most surprisingly, farm animals themselves. Tickets are only $7 each. For more information, you can visit www.tribeofheart.org. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced in the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. John, did you want to have 1 minute? I think we have our first guest on the air. Our first interview is with Gary Lowenthal, the director and founder of the international phenomenon known as the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. On April 24th through May the 2nd, groups from across the world will hold vegan bake sales, and Gary is here to talk with us about that. Hello, Gary, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
First of all, there's not too much more that interests me than vegan bacon. So the topic of this Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale is both very alluring and intriguing to me, and I want to know all about it. So tell us, Gary, what is the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale? Why does it exist, and how did the implementation of this event all start?
Well, the concept is very simple. As you said, groups across the world or individuals hold vegan bake sales at around the same time. So you have this profusion of vegan bake sales going on, which hopefully not only attracts media attention, alternative media and mainstream media, but also generates this fun buzz and gives people maybe in not-so-vegan-friendly areas a feeling of camaraderie and being part of something bigger as they're holding their bake sale at the same time as everyone else. It came about because our new group at the time, Compassion for Animals, was looking for some fundraising ideas, and someone said, how about a bake sale? And I loved the idea because, you know, bake sales are already known, they're traditional, they have very high positives. It's very hard to find, like, a bake sale hater. And so we thought we could combine this well-liked and well-known traditional form of fundraising with vegan outreach. And as I was doing a little bit of research, because I wanted our first bake sale to be awesome, I got some ideas from other places. And somehow, you know, in a blinding flash of light, I had this idea for the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. Mm-hmm. It was a little rough-hewn at first, and so I have to give lots of credit to my Compassion for Animals colleagues for
And what is Compassion for Animals?
You know what it is now. Pardon me?
Compassion for Animals is an organization that you're a part of. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. And we're basically fairly long-term independent activists who decided, well, let's form our own group.
So what were the results of the bake sales last year? How much money was raised, and where did all these proceeds go to? And what kind of places all around the world were the bake sales held?
Well, the first year shattered all our expectations, which I have to admit were very low. I wasn't sure if anyone was going to participate because no one had ever heard of us, no one had ever heard of the event, and we're small. But I was hoping maybe 10 groups would participate the first year, and then we'd gradually build it up. Well, we got 10 fairly quickly, and then it turned into 15, then 20, 30, 40, 50. We had about 80 going on during the official period, and then about 20 after that. So throughout the year, there were about 100
That's
bake
amazing.
Sales.
That's amazing. Wow.
It was amazing.
Imagine all those baked goods.
Oh, a lot of sugary, sweet goods.
Making my mouth water just thinking about it.
I didn't have time to do this, but at one point, and maybe sometime in the future, I just wanted to have a list, just one column long, which was all of the things that were served at all the bake sales, and it would be a mile long. And not only would it be a mile long, but in addition to the favorites like chocolate chip cookies and brownies, there would be thousands, literally thousands of stupendous creations that you might have never heard of or would think of. The variety and the creativity was astounding. Some of the bake sales had colorful creative posters. Some of them were combined with music, just like the one in Vancouver today for Chile. Some of them had craft shows, you name it. The first year we had four continents, really trying to get six this year, including one in Nigeria, and a lot in Australia and the UK, and quite a few in Canada and, of course, the U.S., and a lot of them were in large places like San Francisco, which raised $3,000 in one bake sale, and since then they've had bake sales that raised $4,000, which is practically redefining the concept of a bake sale. But also special place in my heart for the bake sales that were maybe in areas that are not so vegan friendly and don't have a big vegan support system. And so I really appreciate people who, you know, got out and baked all night and set up a table and had a vegan bake sale that way.
And where are these groups donating the proceeds of their bake sales to? Because most of them are doing them as fundraisers, right?
Right. They went all over. Now, in some cases, it might be a group like Farm Sanctuary or Compassion Over Killing, which did a fundraiser for themselves. In a lot of instances, it went to like a local animal shelter or a local spay-neuter service. And in some cases, it went to large groups like Sea Shepherd Conservation Society or Vegan Outreach. But they also went to Sustainable Gardens, to an anti-discrimination program, to a school program. So they go to almost anywhere. And one of the key features I should have mentioned of the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale is that you can do whatever you want with the proceeds.
So you have a great website at www.veganbakesale.org. That is actually a wonderful resource to baking without dairy and eggs, and for those who don't know yet how to do this. So people can go there to get some very useful tips about vegan baking. Gary, you're a vegan yourself, and do you love to indulge in vegan baking yourself, either by making it or eating it?
Well, certainly by eating it.
What quick tips can you give us to our listeners for baking without eggs, for example?
Well, first let me say that in the kitchen I consider myself a hack. Mm-hmm. If I can do it, anyone can do it. Just following the recipe, which is the first thing that I would recommend for baking without eggs, go to a good recipe site or a good recipe book, and whatever binder they're using there, use that, follow the directions, and you'll be amazed, at least I am, at what you can create. You know, you start off with something simple like cookies or muffins, and then work your way up to a three-layer wedding cake. Replacing dairy is simple. Pick out a non-dairy milk.
There's so many of them.
Cow's milk, and you're ready to go. And then you can refine that from that point on, you know, whether to use almond or soy or coconut and so forth. With eggs, it's a little trickier in the sense that there are a number of different, you know, things you can use, and some work better in some recipes than others. Plan B always is to use the egg replacer, which will last forever if you keep it tightly sealed. But something like mashed bananas works great if you want like a creamy texture, and you have to use it in pancakes. You just have to. But if you want something more grainy, you go with flax seeds, ground flax seeds mixed with water. And in fact, a few years ago, the Blue Ribbon winner for Cooks Illustrated for cornbread was a vegan cornbread that used that. And then there are several other, you know, substitutes you can use. I don't even like to use the word substitute, because you can get binding qualities that impart flavors and textures that you might never be able to get with
eggs. For those who just aren't used to using eggs, like I'm not anymore, it's really not a substitute. You just don't need eggs for baking, is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. Why should people participate in the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, and how can people get involved with holding their own Worldwide Vegan Bake Sales?
Well, if you are already involved in some sort of vegan activism, you'll find that a vegan bake sale has this amazingly great and low stress-to-effectiveness ratio. It's almost a stress-free event. I mean, you can have rain and you can have, you know, some problems that occur, but compared to, say, you know, like a day of Ringling demos, this is, you know, no pun intended, it's a piece of cake. It's a lot of fun. At the end of the day, you're tired, but you're a great tired. You're not emotionally drained. For people who are vegan but or on their way to it but aren't activists and may not be interested in something like leafleting or protests, and I like those forms of activism, but a lot of people aren't interested in them. They often are interested in bake sale because it's such a friendly environment, and the people that come to bake sales when they ask questions about dairy and eggs, which is inevitable, it's in a friendly, productive, upbeat manner. So you can bake something for a bake sale and even help out at the table, and I think it'll be very enjoyable. The Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale in particular is fun because not only are you having this bake sale, but many people across the world are having it at the same time. So you're part of this big gala happening that goes beyond just the individual bake sales. And I like to say that each bake sale is unique and has its own flavor, but just as combining the ingredients in a good baking recipe comes out with something wonderful, the same thing happens with the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. Each of these ingredients to bake sales blends together for something that's wonderful and greater than the sum of its parts.
I know that the three of us here actually, before the show, we're talking about having one of our own.
So, yeah, you know, I don't see Vancouver on this year's
list yet,
so far.
Not yet, but look out soon. Yeah. I also, very quickly, we have to wrap up the segment now, but there is a way to get funding through Veg Fund, which is an organization that gives groups funding for events like this, for outreach events. Could you very, very quickly just mention to people how to find out about that?
Sure. You can go to the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale website, which again is veganbakesale.org, and right at the top of the homepage there is a link about funding, and that'll take you to a little intro to vegfund.org. You can also go right to vegfund.org and find out about funding there, and they have a little blurb on the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale.
Okay, so once again, the place to go to find out more about the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale is www.veganbakesale.org. Also, quickly wanted to mention that there's a lot of other resources on that website too, right? You have recipes, you have information on just veganism in general, and can you just quickly run down what else people can find on there?
Sure. We've got resources that you might find useful at your vegan bake sale, such as sample press releases, web banners, a customizable flyer that you can print on your own, links to literature, lots of other stuff like that.
Right. So basically, you know, whatever. What I like, too, is there are a lot of resources on just how to hold a bake sale in general. So you've really done it all.
We might have, at this point, more resources, more tips on bake sales than any other place on the Internet.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Gary. I wish you and all the other bake sale organizers much success in delicious treats in your events.
Thank you so much, and
Thanks, Gary. Good luck
to the vegan bake sale tonight for chili, too.
Thank you very much. So that was Gary Lowenthal of the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, like Joanne and Marianne and I were talking about. Mm-hmm. We might do our own.
I certainly want to eat some.
Yes.
Yeah,
and Allison, I can attest, does fabulous vegan baking every Christmas. I look forward to
her right. Yeah, that's right.
At the Haiti Relief, like Gary was saying, people come up with these amazing recipes. There was this woman that made avocado Nanaimo bars, and it was amazing because you know how avocado is so fattening, and you know it's just
creamy. It's a good avocado is actually a good fat to use in baking, and you can't even taste it. It just makes it really creamy, right?
Yeah. Especially goes really well with chocolate things.
Yeah, that's definitely. And don't forget, there's the bake sale in Vancouver tonight for chili.
Right.
So
I even heard that on CBC on my way here, and they were announcing the bake sale and everything. So it was. They're getting really good mainstream.
Joanne,
media.
You went to the last fundraiser at RADA too, right? How was that?
It was so good. You bring your Tupperware and basically you just load it up with whatever you want, and then there's
so what kind
a jar.
Of treats were there?
Oh my God, I can't even. There's cinnamon buns. There's the avocado Nanaimo bars. There's pizza for people who are into savory things.
That is baking, isn't it?
That is so. Baking.
There's a spectrum, I guess.
Yeah. So, are you guys going tonight?
I can't. I actually have to work tonight, but I wish I could. But definitely, I want to do our own bake sale, just as a not only, of course, for the vegan outreach and for the fundraising aspect, but as a way to get some baking done myself, because I don't mm-hmm. tend to usually do it unless mm-hmm. there's a reason. However, I have been craving cupcakes these last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. I've bought one or two in the last month from Whole Foods. I don't know if you've had their
yes.
Their cupcakes, but actually at the Whole Foods on Canby and 16th, mm-hmm. they had four kinds of vegan cupcakes.
The one with the pink really? Frosting, mm-hmm. white frosting with sugar.
Well, they had a cupcake that it had a little sign. It said award-winning cupcake.
Oh, I hadn't seen
it. And it was
that one.
Mexican. What was it? Mexican chocolate. And cinnamon cayenne.
Oh.
So it had a little bit. Have you ever had chocolate with cayenne in it? It's quite
no.
interesting.
Yes, I love it. I yeah. love the hot okay. chocolate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh,
so those cupcakes at Whole Foods are really an indulgence, but, you know, they're $3 each. And that was probably one of the best
wow.
cupcakes I've ever had. Another one of the best cupcakes I've ever had was a peanut butter cupcake at, what's that place in Portland called? It's Vegan
oh,
Bakery.
Right.
Anyways, it's in the mini food mall. It's the name of it just escapes me right now. Is it... No, I don't want to say anything that might be wrong. But anyways, it's in the vegan mini mall, and they have the best cupcakes. Do we have our next caller on the line, John? Okay, so our feature interview on the show today is with James Levesque, who is the producer of the award-winning documentary film Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. A riveting story of transformation and healing, Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home explores the emotional lives of farm animals and the awakening conscience of several people who grew up in traditional farming culture and who have now come to question the basic premises of their inherited way of life. This film will be making its Canadian premiere in Vancouver this month on March 21st. Hello, James, and thank you for coming on the Animal Voices show today.
Hello, Allison. I'm very glad to be here.
Thank you. Please tell us about the film Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. What would you like our listeners to know about it?
Well, I think what's very interesting about the film is that it tells the story of seven people who go through a rather remarkable transformation in their relationship to animals. And the film is really about the human conscience. It's about our relationship to animals. It's about farming. And it brings out a lot of information that most people are not aware of, both about animals on farms and about farmers.
And why did you and director Jenny Stein decide to create this film?
Well, our life's work is focused on the study and portrayal of what we call the journey of awakening conscience. We believe that the ethical questions surrounding the human-animal relationship are going to be one of the great social justice causes of this century. Mm-hmm. And with billions of lives at stake and really ultimately the environment of our planet being at stake, we can't really think of a more meaningful project to be doing right now.
Can you please tell us about your organization, Tribe of Heart, and the process of how you and Jenny went from being non-filmmakers to starting Tribe of Heart and delving into the world of documentary filmmaking to create your first film, which was The Witness?
Well, Tribe of Heart is a charitable nonprofit organization that both produces and distributes documentaries about the journey of awakening conscience, and we're also an education and outreach organization. So we really see our films ultimately as a vehicle for the transformation of individual lives and hopefully contribute to the transformation of human society. We got started in this work about 10 years ago when, like a lot of other people, we were very troubled by things we saw going on in the world and felt that there was a real struggle for the future of our planet going on, but really felt like we were on the sidelines of that struggle and weren't engaging at the level that we really wanted to, given how much we cared about what was happening. And at that time, we happened to see a documentary about the human-animal relationship that really touched us deeply, and it just spoke to us, and we got the feeling that that something needed to be done and that there was a way to explore this issue that a much larger number of people could relate to. And there began our journey, and the first film that we produced was The Witness, which was released in 2000. And that film really chronicled the story of Eddie Lama, who was a man who grew up in New York City in a family that really had a very poor relationship to animals, and he inherited the attitudes that went along with that. And the film chronicles his awakening from that background into a really, truly deep awareness of the individuality and inherent dignity and worth of animals, And eventually, this man from the most unlikeliest of backgrounds becomes a committed animal advocate and really devotes his life to this cause. And the story inspired people so deeply that it's still going strong. And in fact, we recently released The Witness for online viewing, and currently are offering it in English and in Spanish for free online viewing, and within a few months hope to be offering it in 12 languages. So that project has really continued going.
That's amazing. I'm curious to know, how are your films financed? Is it all independently funded?
Well, we're a charitable nonprofit, and our films are funded through a combination of grants and donations from everyday people who see our work and want to help us keep it going, and also from sales of DVDs of our films.
I'd like to remind our listeners that you are listening to 102.7 FM CFRO Radio in Vancouver. And James, I'm also curious to know, what was your purpose and goal in creating the film Peaceable Kingdom? What did you hope to accomplish from it?
Well, that's a big question. I think that ultimately what it boils down to is that in our own journey, we became aware of individual people that had gone through a really, truly remarkable transformation and an awakening, going from really deep involvement in the use and exploitation of animals to ultimately becoming animal advocates and advocates for justice in many other areas. And we found those stories so inspiring and so informative that we really felt there was a value in telling them, and that particularly with regard to farm culture, there was a whole other side to what goes on behind the scenes that almost no one talks about. And that has to do with the trauma and the pain that many people who grow up in farm culture feel over what they end up having to do with the animals under their care. And this inner conflict is really very telling and very powerful, and it's just an untold story. So that really motivated us. And then hand in hand with that, as we did our work in this area and got to know actually more animals, we began to understand that there was a huge misunderstanding amongst the minds of most people about the nature of farm animals themselves, and that there was a very widely held idea that these animals were fundamentally different than, let's say, the companion animals with which most of us are more familiar. And we realized that if more people understood that the nature and capacities, the social bonds, the intellect, all these qualities that we so value with regard to the animals, like cats and dogs with which we're more familiar, if more people knew that animals on farms have all of these same qualities, it could bring about a great transformation in the public's understanding of our ethical obligations to these animals.
I understand that you wanted to let the animals speak to the audience directly through the universal language of behavior, which perhaps conveys a message to us humans more than we realize. Can you explain how your film does this to allow the animals to communicate to the audience?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because when it comes to really any social justice cause, There are really kind of two facets to the cause and the issue. You know, one is the nature of the injustice that's happening, and then the other is the nature of those experiencing the injustice. And when it comes to an area where, you know, there's long-held beliefs and, you know, maybe a psychological investment in continuing to do things the way we're doing them, it's very important that the case for reexamining that be made in a really compelling way. And what we felt was that, you know, bringing experts to talk about animal behavior and citing scientific studies, while important in the longer term and in the larger scheme of things, in terms of awakening individual people to the issue, by far the most compelling thing is to see with your own eyes what those of us who are more familiar with these animals know. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done with the film is we've documented specific examples of animals in, you know, who are typically animals that are brought into existence, raised, and killed, you know, in the farming industry, show examples of relationships that they have or behaviors that they exhibit that really challenge some of the preconceived notions and ultimately the prejudices that we as a culture hold about them. To be specific, there's a segment in the film that documents the relationship between a mother hen and her baby chick. Mm-hmm. And the footage unequivocally demonstrates that this mother hen exhibits what anyone would recognize as parenting behaviors, you know, bringing food to the chick, protecting the chick, modeling behaviors that the chick then demonstrates, you know, all these things that very few people ever would think of chickens evidencing. Mm-hmm. And after you see this, I mean, universally, people mm-hmm. are sort of stunned.
That really is mm-hmm. a universal language of behavior. You know, they act just as humans do in that respect. Mm-hmm. The film shows us the stories of several people's lives who have grown up in traditional farming culture and then came upon a revelation that caused them to rethink their lives and the relationships to the animals that they had been so used to using for their products. We have people such as Howard Lyman, the famous mad cowboy, who is known as being the cattle rancher who went vegan, and he has an amazing story to share. And there is also Harold Brown, who's also known as Farmer Brown, who grew up as a dairy farmer and did a complete 360 in his life and now devotes himself to working for animal rights and supporting farmers to switch from animal agriculture to plant agriculture. Could you tell us about maybe one of these stories of the people that are profiled in the film and how his or her life was transformed?
Well, certainly the stories of Howard Lyman and Harold Brown are very powerful because they, really examine what it means to grow up, not just in your own generation, but come from a long line of people that are involved in one way of relating to animals and in one one way of life with certain rules of the game and ideas that are held by everyone to be just reality, and to emerge from that, to connect with what you feel inside and what you've seen yourself and begin to question what you inherited and eventually to part company with that. And it's extremely powerful. One of the other stories told in the film that I think is of great interest to people, especially animal advocates in today's world, is the story of Sherry Ezell and Jim Vandersloot, who are small-scale New England multi-generational dairy farmers who end up going through a truly remarkable transformation with regard to the animals under their care. And why this story is, I think, particularly relevant is that there are many people today who are going down the path of thinking that when it comes to animals and our relationship to them, the significant question is, are we using and killing them in, quote, the right way or not? Mm-hmm. And what this story told in the film really does is it almost allows the audience to run a thought experiment. Well, what if there were very kind, ethical, compassionate people who truly wanted to raise and kill animals in a way that could be described as compassionate or fair or, mm-hmm. Along those lines, or humane? And what happens? What happens when they do this? And what the film really conclusively demonstrates is that, as people move more and more in the direction of recognizing that animals are worthy and deserving of respectful treatment, then their ultimate fate, being killed and used as a product for commerce, ends up contradicting the relationship that develops if they're treated with some measure of respect. So there's this paradox that develops where, on the one hand, you've got the large-scale industrialized farming, which has been well-publicized, and a lot of people recognize the monstrosity and the excesses of, produced by that type of situation. But then at the other end of the scale, at the smallest farms, at the farms where people are spending the most time with the animals and are most aware and trying to treat them as best they can, this other contradiction develops where, in a sense, the better they treat them, the more the animals open up and become connected, the greater the violence is done to them when they are ultimately killed or sold off or whatever their tragic fate tends to be. And that, I think, is something that we're finding audiences are really almost stunned by, mm-hmm. because it calls into question something that is a very popular idea right now.
We only have a couple minutes left, but that's what I wanted to talk about, is the audience reactions of this film. I've read so many comments on your website from audience members. This film has broken people's hearts. It's been extremely powerful and eye-opening, thought-provoking, a beautiful and touching film, people have said, and a movie that everyone needs to see. What has been your own experience with the personal feedback that you've received from people who have watched this film?
Well, I would say, having done this for 10 years and having done a number of films and really been to hundreds of screenings, what really strikes me about this film and what excites me about it the most is that I feel like people from the widest range of backgrounds are just struck by the authenticity of the film and by the importance of the issues that it brings forth. And what we find that is really amazing is that people that tend to be more intellectually centered, let's say, find that the argument put forth by the film is credible and engaging, and one that they have to take seriously and grapple with, and that somehow opens them to the emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And then people that are more emotionally centered find the authenticity mm-hmm. and the sincerity of the subjects of the film very moving. Their hearts open, and because it rings true to them on an emotional level, I think they become open to the reasoned argument that it also puts forth. So it really seems to touch and ring true to a very wide range of people, and we've heard many reports of people of all over the spectrum, all kinds of backgrounds, feeling like as a result of seeing this film, they are going to rethink their relationship to other animals from the ground up. Nothing could be more exciting to us.
Yeah, and very quickly here, if people aren't able to make it to the March 21st screening or the screenings that you're having around North America, and they want to watch it afterwards or show it to people, how can people access this film to watch it? Will there be plans for that in the future?
Yes. Later this spring, we will be releasing the film on DVD. Right now, we're raising the funds to produce the DVD and the associated educational resources. And in the meantime, people who would like to support this film and its message can help spread the word about coming events on Facebook, through websites. They can approach film festivals in their region and ask them to consider showing the film. And for people who would like to, who are new to Tribe of Heart's work and would like to be introduced to it, right now they can go online at www.tribeofheart.org, and they can watch our first film, The Witness, online.
That's wonderful.
Begin the journey.
Thank you so much for being on the Animal Voices show, James. And for all our listeners, I do urge you to check out that website, tribeofheart.org, and especially to attend the Vancouver screening and Canadian premiere of the film on Sunday, March the 21st at the Edgewater Casino in Vancouver. It starts at 4:40 p.m. and tickets are only $7 each.
Great.
Thank you very much, Allison.
You're welcome.
Thanks for all that you do.
Coming up next week, we'll be interviewing Anthony Marr regarding the 7th Annual Compassion for Animals Road Expedition. We'll also be speaking with Crystal Moore about her involvement in a resolution passed by the BC Teachers Federation this week to consider using alternatives in science dissection classes. And don't forget, we want to hear from you. Tell us how we're doing, what you would like to hear on the show, and what we can do to improve the show. Email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, tweet us at animalvoicesyvr, or join our Facebook group at Animal Voices Vancouver. You've been listening to Animal Voices. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week.